I'd like to say good morning, everyone. Good rest. So basically, to summarize about enthusiasm, to make it a little simpler, so it's not too complicated, convoluted way of explaining, just joy. Finding joy in doing good thing. The joy is the engine, the power that runs the engine. You have a joy, you are more likely to do it. And only doing things can make things happen. Is that right? Simple, extremely simple. So by all means, at all cost, you always make sure you maintain the happy frame of mind. That is your weapon, sword, your imagine your good old day warfare, riding on the horse, you know, brandishing your sword in the air, trying to crush your enemies. Have you ever done that? Yeah, it sounds familiar, is that right? And no matter whatever you do, make sure don't drop this sword on the ground. Don't do it. Because if you do drop this sword on the ground, you're finished. Unless you're struck with luck, you escape, but you don't stand a chance. The inner war, inner warfare is like that. You, once your peace and happiness, the weapon, that's your happiness. Your weapon, I mean a good way, I don't mean a destructive way, in a constructive way, that's your weapon. Once you lose that, you're finished, you're vulnerable. You got that? So if somebody says, watch, Lama Pema, is this your car? Yes, can I scratch this a little bit? If they say it to me, is that right? How do I behave? How I normally would most likely to behave? And they're ready to scratch it, is that right? Just peel out my skin or the paint. How do you see me as an ordinary, typical, you know, person? How do I behave?
You get angry.
Yeah.
Try to stop me.
We'll be angry, we'll be shocked, we'll be aggressive, we'll do anything except the one thing I will not do is protect my peace of mind. Is that right? I'll do anything. I'll shoot them, I'll kill them. Is that right? Anything. So you see, we are absolutely upside down. Well, what you should have done is, first thing is watch my peace of mind. Then the last thing I should worry about is paint under my car. Are you there? Are you there with me? Yeah. You see, there's an issue. Because remember, our worth is not on those paints. Is that right? It cannot. It looks like, but it's not. It tells you that we have no idea how to fight this inner war. It tells you the idea that you cannot go to war with an empty hand. You need a sword. Either to crush your enemy or offend yourself. Is that right? So what you do is hold tightly to the sword and then wage war against negative emotion. Is that right? You have a much better chance. You can always fix that paint. You can always maintain the degree of dignity and grace. It may cost you $300 or something. Nothing that compares the value of the peace of the mind. Is that right? Remember, the peace of mind is not some innocent, casual experience. It ties up with your blood pressure. It ties up with your self-esteem. Is that right? It ties with your health. I mean, the blood pressure is kind of, it's not just some problem. It really can screw up everything else. Is that right? Yeah, it could affect every part of your physical existence. So these are real. It's not imaginary. It's not some idea. It's real. We do live on those events, the event that takes place every moment. So always make sure you hold tightly to the peace of the mind and the happiness. Can't wait to have a breakfast kind of idea. Can't wait to go to the work. Is that right? And can't wait to go to sleep. And then just think of like you're a child, innocent child. Is that right? And of course they are blessed with birth, but now we don't have that. We have to articulate it. We have to make our own. Is that right? We have to make that. If you don't, I'm not going to be there. Forget about me. Buddha is not going to be there. Nobody's going to be there. It's just us. So keep that in mind. So today, this morning session, we'll talk about patience, which is kind of, you know, very well. Is that right? Patience is what? Virtue. Done. I think our lecture is finished. Is that right? Is that anything more to know than that? Are there anything more to know more than the patience is virtue? Anybody has any ideas, suggestions? There has to be, of course. Of course, the hint is there is that right? Remember, the Buddha is the one who is endowed with the quality of 10 powers and 4 fearlessness. You like this kind of list of things? Actually, I don't know all of it. But I know one of them is patience. Other one is generosity. Still other one is enthusiasm. Is that right? You know what I mean? In our sutra, one of the sutra, it says, the line of men is another epithet for the Buddha. It's kind of like, what do you call it, metaphoric name. Buddha has some 40, 60 names. Tathagata, Sugata, you know, like that. Shakya Singha, Shakya King, Gautama. You know why Buddha is called Gautama? Because he's son of Gautami. Is that right? Just like Peterson. Is that right? Or Johnson. You have that kind of Western thing. I think that style exists universally somehow. It's called Gautama Buddha. Shakyamuni, you know why it's called Shakyamuni? Oh, that guy from Shakya clan, that guy, the one who became a sage and savior of the world, that one. I mean, there are competing teachers, remember. It's not the only Buddha existing at that time. In fact, most of the teachers are competitive to the Buddha. So they don't necessarily have this devotional, you know, reverence. They say, oh, that guy, the nice one, the good-looking one, the one who talks always nice things and screw up everybody's mind and do nothing, who don't have any magical powers of some sort, who's, you know, handsome, pretty. In fact, I think he's not even men. I think he's kind of women. I mean, people say it like that. Because Buddha is very handsome, almost feministic. Is that right? So we have, Buddha has some 40, 50, 60 names. So that's what we call Lion of Men. It's also the Lion of Men has understood the power of patience. That's what it says. Mi singi jimbe tobde, nyingji jinji chongji jugba na. Jimbe tobji sanje yangda pa. Oh, I forgot the first one. Buddha is exalted by the power of patience. Meaning exalted, is that right? Am I right? My English is not that great. It's just you have to fill it in. You have to make up. Or maybe he meant like that, you know. I just make it up. Buddha is exalted. Can you say it like that?
Yes.
Buddha is exalted by the power of patience. Am I right? Can I write it like that in literal language?
Yes.
And nothing wrong grammatically? Okay. That's good. Buddha is exalted by the power of patience. And he is the one who understood the power of patience. That when he walks and travels and passes through the villages and towns, there he proclaims the power of patience. You got that? Okay, done. Let's go home. So it gives you a hint. There's something to be understood. The one who totally, fully understood the power of patience is the Buddha. In fact, the perfection of patience coincides with the enlightenment itself. That means there's room to grow. There's room to learn. Is that right? There's a whole lot to learn. Is that right? There's all the way to the Buddhahood. That means there's so much to learn about the patience. Am I right? You understand that? Okay. So let's try a little bit of that. But what we can understand is the intellectual aspect of it. Is that right? So we can sort of reason, we can see how it plays out in our day-to-day life. Not so much of abstract, some beyond this life. Future or rebirth, you know, forget about that. I don't stand a chance. Nor you will be excited about it. You might fall asleep if I talk about that. But I think it would be nice to talk that this seems to be that the patience has something to do with our day-to-day life. I think that is something you can relate to. And hopefully you might be inquisitive, and that might become a stepping stone to say maybe there's more to this. Is that right? So that's the now remember we talked, you know, you all know about six perfection, and we're only talking about 3-1. He said that's what I chose. I thought it's important to raise the issue, because we're too smart. We want to do wisdom, compassion, enlightenment. Is that right? Oh, meditation. Now the mindfulness is just like a huge thing. Is that right? That's kind of interesting. I remember I came to US at the end of 1982. Nick and we go a long way. We are Dharma buddies. We're the Dharma brother. Nick and I, we received Lamde teaching from His Holiness in 1981, is that right? So we are Vajra brothers. Anyway, I came to US at the end of 1982. I met a very good friend who is Christian, and we talked. I have, you know, good start with English. So I didn't come with no knowledge, I was knowledge. And somehow in the midst of our conversation, I blurted out saying mindfulness. And then he looked at me with wide eyes. what kind of English are you talking about? He says, oh, I was a little embarrassed. Oh, sorry, I didn't know. I thought that was an English word. So I was kind of embarrassed. You know, sometimes you think like you know, but you didn't know. And you went back home, I was looking at the dictionaries. You know. I thought there is a word for mindfulness. Maybe there isn't. So I looked at it, I can't find it anywhere. Part because I didn't know where to look for. I thought the mindfulness, the main entry, but it's way down, somewhere down below in the midst of mind. Is that right? And that too, like four or five words. And that's mindfulness. So it really got confused me because I don't know what that means. Now after 30-something years, it's like a household word. Is that right? This tells you that we have so much to learn. Is that right? You understand that? Let's raise some issues, things like patience. It's not just simple things say, okay, patience is virtue. Is that right? Forgiveness is a great thing to do. Is that right? It's good to let go of things. That is simple. Anybody can say that. But we need to sort of go a little bit deeper, and there may be some flavor is there. A different kind of flavor, a kind of acquired flavor. Sorry, acquired flavor. Do you know what that means? Acquired flavor. What that mean? If I give you a tobacco, you will be disgusted. Is that right? But after a while, you can let it go. Is that right? That's acquired taste. Patience, like any other taste, good or worse, has acquired aspect of the experience, something you gain over time that you don't have it before. There's something to be understood. What we're going to do is not so much of practicing it, but at least we pursue the educated path, at least learn about it, then we could do something. You're more likely to do better, or not only do it, but do it better. Because remember, I would say most of the human vice are not because we humans are bad, thinking bad, destructive, harmful, no. I think we're thinking most of the time good thoughts. It's very rare to think negative thoughts, meaning I want to harm them, I want to hurt them, I want to destroy them. Is that right? Yeah, people do, but even you can't do too much. There are some individual, in out of hundreds, there are some mean people, but it's so small. Is that right? Rare. But our vice is not because we are mean and destructive, conniving and hurtful and harmful. Our vice is essentially about misunderstood doing the right thing in the wrong way. Are you there? Case in point is all the warfares. We don't say, oh, we're going to go to war, we're going to destroy our enemies. Is that right? Don't do that. We always say this is good for the peace. Is that right? We go to the war for peace. And we convince ourselves to do that. I mean, this gives you an idea that every other thing has a similar kind of pattern there. So that's why Buddha teaching is so important, because it's based on education. And education is the best remedy for ignorance, which is the cause of pretty much every bad things. So at least what it can do, intellectual education can at least essentially help overcome all the problems that are caused by us intellectually. In other words, all the problems that are caused by our own misunderstanding, ignorance, they can be solved. It will not be able to solve your, if you're hungry, it's not going to solve. You still have to eat. But it will solve all the mental issues, confusions, ignorance, hate that are generated because of misunderstanding. Is that right? Easily done, just like that. That's the beauty. It's cheap, doesn't cost much, just a matter of knowing things. Then there are other issues we call habits, instincts. Is that right? Then there are other issues and so on and so on. But that's the other thing. So we are only dealing with man-made problems that connect with the conscious mind, which thinks and does and behaves and creates an opinion or some kind of perception, and we conduct ourselves like that. That kind of problem, whatever the problem that exists, we can actually overcome it. Just like that. So we are studying yesterday and today is all on that level only. So don't think that now you heard Dharma, you're supposed to be nice all the time. No, you can't. You can be still cranky, same old person. That's okay. But at least you can get rid of all the garbage that you mentally created. That you can free yourself. A degree of freedom is achievable. So much so that even alleviating ourselves from the burden you created ourselves on and on just pure intellectual, but that alone is a great freedom. That could really lighten up the burden of the samsara, at least one third of it. We still have to deal with instincts, habits, which intellectual understanding cannot even put a dent on it. It has to be done otherwise. So let's go back the I love metaphors. Let's see. Let me see if I cook up some metaphors. We've been talking about generosity. Is that right? Think that this beautiful temple, holy temple, is that right? It's made up of material. Is that right? Think like it's a generosity. Just think. You can't just live in the open space and feel protected. You have to have a roof and a wall, you know what I mean? And a floor and everything. Think, what did you do? Enthusiasm is like all the Buddhas. Make your life beautiful, elevated. Is that right? Just make up. I'm just making it. It's just that we have something to talk. Now we are under this, inside of this beautiful temple, protected from a strong weather, slight heat, the cold in this case, a rain, a snow, whatever, wind, is that right? And we are extremely comfortable inside. And then we have a Buddha shrine, we have holy objects, we have all the masters, beautiful paintings. Everything is in perfect place. Is that right? And then we have a structure that holds this thing. And we have a roof. And if you look at it, it's just beautiful. But there's one thing we don't see it, but we know it. Guess what? And that is this. What is that it is this whole function for us to be able to be comfortably inside something. And this whole beautiful place that we created inside. Is that right? This structure that's made out of walls, which is made out of bricks and mortars and some steels. Is that right? Why how come it stands still like this? Is it right? Especially the roof, the beam. Is there a huge beam here? We know this beam is holding the roof, which is probably, I don't know, several hundred tons. Is that right? Are you there guessing? Can you guess something? Maybe my question is a little vague. Did you hear my question? It's confusing, is that right? Oh, okay, I understand. What is that thing that makes this structure standing upright in position? Is that right? And this roof over our head is up there, not caving down, because everything dependent on some force that holds this thing together. Is that right? What is that?
Balance.
What?
Balance. The foundation.
Nope.
Gravity.
Nope. I'll give you a lollipop, whoever says the right thing.
Well, it's the strength of the wood.
Yes, you're getting there. I think you're the closest one. You're going to miss the lollipop. You don't like lollipops? What? You better speak up.
Human ingenuity?
No, I real. It's just... this is something the whole thing.
The columns.
What?
The columns.
Not bad.
The integrity of all of this structure. Just
yeah, you're closest. I'll give you half the lollipop.
The nails.
What?
The cement, the nails.
Yeah, you're there. It's just the force, the sheer strength of the beam that holds this 100 ton above us. There is a force that's not visible. Is that true? Am I right? That is holding the weight of hundreds of ton up there. And the wood is a little bit hard to explain, but it's better if I explain a kind of concrete. Think that this beam is concrete. Is that right? I think this is easier to understand with the concrete. The concrete is so brittle unless you put a force, a steel bar. Am I right? That's called reinforcement. That steel bar holds the strength of the beam. Are you there? If there is no steel bar, no matter how big your beam is, it's going to cave in. Everything I explained has no meaning. So this whole thing is hinges on some force. Is that right? Some strength. You understood that metaphor? That's it. This is real. Your happiness, your compassion, kindness, generosity we're talking about, enthusiasm we're talking about, are like the floors. They're like the walls. But they're nothing like the beams. They are like the mortars. They are like bricks. They're like a pillar without reinforcement inside of that pillar. You know, I've seen that in the real life. You put a big pillar that just stops this big steel thing, so many of it, is that right? And the more you put it, more is powerful to hold the thing together. You can imagine the absence of that. This building can crumble any second. Is that right? Even the smallest of the force, the wind, can crumble the structure. Is that true? Yeah, it's potentially true. But when you put the reinforcement inside, then even almost catastrophic force comes, still it can withstand that force. Is that right? Okay, let's stop that metaphor. I just want to make sure that you understand. Besides, it cost me a lot of calories to explain. And I have very little amount of calories around here. So, your spiritual structures, such as generosity, we talk a lot, such as enthusiasm, your meditation, your compassion, your peace of the world, you know, all those things. I like every part of your building. And we notice that when something goes wrong, what is that goes out of the window first? Is that the expression you call use? Is that right? How do you say it?
Thrown out the window.
Yeah, what you find yourself throwing out through the window?
Throw out the window.
Is that right? What is that you throw away first?
Patience.
You dump it first.
Patience.
What?
Patience.
No. Peace of mind. You'd say that was the most important thing. Compassion, kindness, respect to others. Are they important? If that is important, why you throw it away first thing before anything else? Imagine you're holding a garbage bag like this. Just say, literally, you're literally holding a garbage bag in your hand and you're ready to leave your kitchen to downstairs, basement, and you're holding it like this, is that right? Just imagine that something goes wrong, you know, your kid did something or some bad news come up. You will discover you have thrown everything else out, you find yourself holding the garbage still. You got the point. Is that true? Is it possible? What you should be doing is when something goes wrong, first thing you throw is the garbage because you're angry. So you should throw the garbage and make sure your peace and happiness are intact. Is that right? Your grace and dignity are intact. Your respect and your love for each other is intact. Your trust is intact. Is that right? No. Every worth of it is thrown in the garbage except the garbage itself. That tells you how important the patience is. Because what you lost, what you did was you lost the patience. You're upset, you're disturbed. Basically, impatience is known in another form. It's a disturbed, mental, The mental agitation is what the impatience is. The word in, we have to sort of redefine the word in a Buddhistic way, meaning what the Buddha means. So you can see that how mistaken we are. We want to cook food without pot and pan. Can't do it. You cannot succeed to have a healthier, happier, contented life or compassionate or whatever you want without the combination of patience. But you never thought of that. Have you ever thought of that? You know about the virtues of the patience, but you didn't know how essential it is. Did you get that? I think you seem to understand it. So today's message is basically to be aware that how important the patience is. Is that right? So it's not something you do when you feel like. It's not like something, okay, I'll let you go this time, but don't do it again. Is that right? It's okay, it's all car anyway, so let them scratch. That's not a patience. Is that right? Or you say, you know, I don't care what they do. Like a denial kind of idea. Is that right? That's not the patience. These are different attitudes of your mind. It doesn't touch on the virtue, the value of the patience itself. But at least you got the hint that your chances of benefiting or succeeding or whatever it is from compassion, kindness, generosity is almost zero without the combination of the patience. Another, you cannot go too far. If you're being generous and helping help, giving help to somebody, and if they ask for the second time, you're most likely to give, and if the third time, you already are tested. Is that right? I've known people who were married for 60 years and finally said, that's enough. Well, it's, to me, it's, if you see a big picture, it's like a joke, you know. Why 60 years? Why not 70? Why not the rest of the life? Why 5 years for that matter? You know what I mean? Every time you fail, there is a telltale sign for good or worse, is that right? That you are in a shortage of patience. That you can be sure about. You may not like it. You may not want to agree with it. But that is how we are being impacted. But then you will say, you know what, there are times you should not be patient, and I like that. So there you have millions of questions. This is one typical question. When I preach, is that right? Oh, talk about it. People say, oh yeah, I like it, but there are times. Because in the Western culture, the word abuse, word abuse is untouchable word. Is that right? Is that true? It has gone to such a level that we cannot think of any good thing about the abuse. Is that true? The news, the events, people get hurt, suffer because the abuse is so prevalent that there is not a room that there is anything good at all to accept the abuse. Which I kind of agree, except you are doing it at the cost of the loss of your own whatever you try to accomplish. In other words, you basically are destroying the very thing that you're trying to accomplish. We didn't know that. And in the big picture, we notice that, for example, If you look at the world as samsara, then we notice the impatience, how destructive it is. It is the breeding ground for negative emotions. It perpetuates it. Somebody harms me, and I think I have to respond, and I respond it in the way they do, because that makes me feel good. At least it's just. The word just is another thing that we are so kind of obsessed about it. We feel justified doing just thing, and we feel righteous about it. All these are backed by impatience, saying, don't accept this, it's wrong. They will do it again and again. It's not right. It's your right to fight back. They have to pay for it. You know, these are the standard norm of the way how we operate our life. Mindlessly, of course. We didn't sit there for years and years and meditate and finally figure out that this is the way. We just do it mindlessly. We think, we hear things that this is the way to go. I mean, just last year, one of our close people, I'm not that close, but belong to this Tibetan community in Boulder, Colorado. Little boy about, I don't remember exact, 4, 5, 6 year old, cute little boy. Somebody just drove and just killed him, just like that, Tibetan boy. And the parents did unthinkable. They just let go of the person. It's okay. We forgive you. Just like that. It's extremely unacceptable. Is that right? How in the world this guy mindlessly driving and killing innocent people? Is that right? Just think differently. Just think differently. There are people who see the wisdom of doing the right thing in the midst of the worst situation. Is that right? And besides, that's where the patience is. It's a nonsense to feel patient because you're comfortable, nobody's harming you. Patience is where you're being challenged. Is that right? And if you cannot be patient when you're challenged, forget about patience. Your idea of patience as virtue is nonsense. Is that right? Somebody's agreeing with me here. So I have a good ally on this side of the bench. This side is a little tricky. They look like Republicans. This is really true, it happened. They are not trying to be nice. They see the wisdom. They must stop. Is that right? They stopped it. They let go scathe-free to this guy. We don't want to call it criminal. It just can't happen. Either intentionally or accidentally. Either way, your loved one is gone. Is that right? What does it matter? Whether it was done by accident, whether it's done intentionally. Now, you have to think very different logical, there's a different logic way of looking. It's called enlightened logic. Do you understand that? Do you know what I mean? Enlightened logic is the way it operates, very different operating system. But of course, we don't want to go there, it's fine. But at least gives you an idea that it's not fixed. Is that right? That you can do whatever you want to do. You can incriminate them, make sure that he is put into the jail for the rest of life. If possible, just execute him. That will be the best way to do it. Is that right? For some. Is that right? But when you see the big picture, this whole fixed idea of what's right or wrong will be a little blurry. Is that right? it's going to be blurred. All of a sudden, state changes the law saying, now we don't want to do a capital punishment. And so all of a sudden, Lucky was a priest. Just we made it up. We know we make it up. So you will, in the process of learning to be patient and see the beneficial effects of the patience, you will encounter challenges, psychological, rational, emotional, and some financial disadvantage. Is that right? Now that your car is in a scratch by these rascals, you are paying some several hundred dollars to fix it. Is that right? So it could be any level. So anyway, bottom line is this. Patience has to do with the harm they receive, either by the cold weather. You know, that's why some people develop the hate for the cold weather. Is it sinful to be hateful of the cold weather? Is it sinful to hate the rocks and trees? Is hate something sinful or what? Can you to be sinful or evil? Is it only happens to another human being or animals, or you can be still suffer the similar consequences whether you hate the humans or rocks or pillars or water or trees? It tells you that it's all subjective, is that right? But I think one of the reasons is to that we feel just about to be angry is because we feel what they are doing to you, be it your enemy or be your creator, the God, or... There are a lot of people angry with God. Is that right? Is that true? I've seen that in the movies. You know, like when there are tsunamis, Buddhists are saying not so much to blame. And then there are other God believers. They're cursing the God. I can tell that. So there's something that is unacceptable is done, and then we are upset. And we are angry, and it has to be somehow, what do you call? In other words, we mix a little bit of the social justice, that's what we call. I think the word justice is more of a social issue than a spiritual issue. Is that right? Yeah. But we mix these two up. Somehow we find a spiritual worth in the social setting, which is kind of cheap, because somehow your worth is out there somehow. If the people treat you nicely, the world looks better. Is that true? If they mistreat you, the world looks not good. It tells you that your worth is out there. So we feel like if nobody harms me, I will be a nice person. Is that true? It's true, yeah. We always wish nobody harms me, everybody loves me, everybody respects me. And that tells you, it's a telltale sign. Your patience seems to be based on when nobody's harming you. And that way you live patiently, kindly, gently, you know, peacefully. And I think that's extremely wrong. There will never come a time that you will never encounter challenges or difficulties. If one challenge is over, another will come. In this kind of way of operating our life, guarantees that we'll suffer forever. Because one problem comes, it will go away at some point, then another will show up. That we must suffer, remember? Our suffering is based on the conditions that are caused by others. And when it comes to others, it's boundless counts. Is that right? There's always something will show up. So what we do is we wish that nobody harms us. Is that true? Everybody loves us. How many of you kind of think like that? I mean, instinctually you all think like that. Is that right? Is that true? You may not philosophically agree with me. You say, no, I don't think like that. You know, of course. But deep down, you're being loved, cared for, respected. Is that right? That exists. And that makes us extremely weak. Because you never tested your strength. And then even if they are not harming you, you are so vulnerable that you tend to. I must not say you, I'm in the same boat, by the way, just to make sure that I don't want to think like I'm some holier than thou art. Absolutely no, I just want to make sure that. But I have to use the word you because I'm in charge here today. So let me use the word you, knowing fully that I'm part of this. Is that right? Is that all right? In English, we have to use the word him, her, he, you. Depends, we don't have to do it. It's easier. That's why we are forced to say whether the God is he or she. Is that right? You have to put this. That kind of wishful thinking is detrimental, is very weakening. Because, first of all, harms that seems to come from outside is contingent with the recipient of the harm. Like we talked yesterday about taste of the food that is in it, and the taster, is there a taster, the one who tastes it, has to come together to experience the taste. If you don't have a taste bud, it has no meaning. Is that right? So if you think you're being harmed, you at least to be nice, you have to know that you're a part of it. So you're not just 100% innocent, you're participating. And Shantideva clearly says that in his book. The recipient of the harm, I know it's not socially acceptable. How in the world we say I'm responsible for my own harm? Is that right? And it's dangerous if I speak in the public. But here, at least we need to provoke, challenge our thinking. I can say that we are participants in the harms we receive. We're not that 100% innocent either. It's true. Same harm done to me and to the Buddha is going to be different. Buddha cannot be harmed, not because Buddha is not harmed, but he cannot be harmed. Is that right? Am I right? In other words, Buddha is invincible to the harm. Is that right? And he cannot be afflicted with the harm. Let's put it that way. But I could be harmed. Is that true? Let me put you guys in something. What if I harm you all? Me. Is that right? And my joke is this, I made it up, it seems to work. Let me repeat the joke. If I'm suffering with cold, flu, and I have a running nose, you remember that metaphor? Is that right? And I have a running nose, and you can imagine my hand will be smeared with the even though it looks nice, is that right? And I shake hands. Good morning, good morning, good morning, like this. Is that right? So I'm very generous, so I gave you an equal opportunity to get sick. Basically, I give you a gift of a lot of viruses. Is that right? Then I wait for I wait for a day or two, is that right? And then we regroup together. There's a chance that somebody is sick. There's also a chance that most of you are okay. Is that right? But one thing is sure, not everybody is going to be sick, nor everybody is stay healthy. Why the discrepancies? Is that right? Is that right? Is that the word? Why the difference? Why some? Because remember, I'm a good harmer. I don't discriminate. I will harm indiscriminately, equally, with equal opportunities. Why some people get this major opportunity to be harmed? Is that right? Why? It's too easy. Simple. Is that right? The harms that I gave you, whether or not you receive harms, is dependent on you. You got that? And that too depends on your strength. That's the beauty. The beauty is, yep, and we call it immune system. Stronger immune system, the better. Is that right? And the ones who are weak in their immune system will get hurt. So I may be the one who gave you the virus, but you're playing other half of the role. Is that right? That's how it works with the Buddhas. Buddhas cannot be harmed. It doesn't mean that nobody is harming Buddha. They cannot be afflicted with harms. Because remember, we started with Buddha is the one who perfected the patience. You got that? And how that works is kind of interesting. Now, it's if I say perfected patience, somehow you become strong. Is that right? But there's the twist in this. The twist is this. We worry about being harmed because being harmed make us what? Lesser, weaker. Don't we? Don't we feel like that? Don't we? Especially if we are abused, bullied again and again. Is that right? Anybody where grew up being bullied at in this group? Lady with the green sweater, you say that?
Sure. I thought everyone had their opportunity.
Now you're being robbed of my kind of twisted jokes, yeah. I think you're getting it. Thank you, at least. We must be so lucky that we got a chance to be bullied. Actually, there's one phenomenon. It's just the one good thing about Tibetans. They're among little other good things. My generation, at least, which is a very contrast to my age to the West. We were beat up by our teachers too, like anybody else. Is that right? The difference is that we laugh at it. We talk about it. Who was beat up the most? You can't do this. This generation in the West, you can't. That's kind of interesting. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, I know it's shocking for you. But remember, your ideas that you know can't always be right. You could be wrong. Is that right? Do you understand what I'm saying? So we have to have an open mind. We're not saying one is right, one is wrong, but there are better things that can be generated, you know. Otherwise, all the holy saints and great men and women can only be possible in a cradle of silver plate or something, you know what I mean? And that hardly happens anyway. Otherwise, all these people who are harmed, actually, according to our calculation, they should all be negative, bitter. Is that right? They should, because they suffer the most. And if we are bitter and negative because we suffer, these great people should 100,000 times more bitter and negative. Is that right? Why not? That's just what we think is the right thing to do. They are not. They have a different ways of seeing things. Is that right? There are different ways of understanding, handling, behaving, conducting, reacting, and relating to the things. And we suffer because we fixated on it. My father never took me to fishing. He cared less about my life, kind of idea. Is that right? I mean, little things become so real, stuck, and never get out of it, and suffer for the rest of the life. All this points out that there was absence of something called patience. Now, the patience has a different logic. It doesn't, the way it operates cannot be the social norm, which is changeable. Is that right? Now it's okay, now it's not okay. So what is this nonsense? Some people dies, literally. And the next day the law changes, some people lives for the greater evil they do. This we made it up. And we start to believe everything what we made it up. Strange, is that right? I've known in US, there are killers who kill, say, 10, 20 people, still alive. And there's a guy who didn't kill anyone, who just stabs somebody and goes to execution and dies. Have you known that people like that? Yes. It says made up. You can see how stupid, illogical nonsense is. But we have to do it because we cannot think otherwise. Strange, is that right? Very strange. At least it tells us we made it up, or we are the one who's making it up. Anyway, here's go back to our spiritual values. So let's don't go there, because I have not much to tell you. Probably you are better than me. The social laws and justice, you know. I may have to come to you to see what's the right thing to do, how to prosecute somebody who abused me or something. But we're not talking about this. We're talking about the patience, its virtues, its values. So there's a twist in this. To understand it, you need to kind of like a science. We need to be a little detective. What is connected to what? Is that right? Now, one thing we learn is that harm is connected to ourselves. Did you get that? Another, especially how much of the harm we receive is connected to us. Is that right? Is that right? Like, I know of a story. It's a very scary one. Kate don't like the scary ones. I think it's true, but probably it's made up. You know, good old days in the 60s, hippie generation. Any hippie, ex-hippie around here? You're so romantic, you travel the world in this old van or something. And there's hippie family traveling somewhere in the east. A van that the father, the mother, little girl, must be Canadian, American, whoever that is. And when you go to remote places, the children have no notion how dangerous the buses and cars are. They're not used to it. Is that right? Because they don't have this, the feeling of it. It's like you riding a horse for the first time. You would throw and be dead, actually. They're not used to how to relate to the moving things. So they accidentally kill a little girl. And then, of course, the entire village comes up, you know, horse them, and they're quarreling, they're fighting, they're saying, now these are foreigners, they cannot beat them up or anything, it's just they don't know what to do. They cannot let them go, they hold it, but what do you do when you hold it? What do you do? And then it went on, and hours, nobody understand each direction because nobody understand each other. Finally, one young man came, grabbed that little girl and killed it on the spot and let them go. That's the justice. Makes perfect sense, is that right? I think to me it makes perfect sense. Just kill it, equal, is that right? Do you understand what I'm saying? I know you're shocked. Now, you think the way how social people think. Makes perfect sense. Man, that's what we're doing here, too. Differently, maybe, different form. It doesn't matter whether you hang or cut your throat or electrocuted or injected, it matters. Is that right? It's more like for our own self. It's not the concern for, because we can't bear to see this man dying electrocuted for the next 10 minutes like this. Is that right? We can't bear to do it. It's for our own safety. Strange behavior we human has. Strange. We're not that polite. We're not that, what do you call it? Polished, civilized. All these has the roots that something is unacceptable. Is that right? Something cannot unless we do this or that. You can track these, trace these nervous system back to this mind that has little screwed up ideas what is right or wrong. Is that right? What is the better thing to do or not? So we do all sorts of things. And one of the biggest mistakes is that misunderstanding is in among others like this is internal misunderstanding. Somehow the harms makes us weak. Is that true? I mean, generally, the experience makes us weaker, fearful, uncomfortable. Is that right? Just kind of disturbs your peace of mind and everything else. But if you look deeper, that's not true. In fact, harms does something extremely helpful. That's something we don't know that. So let's take a break. And 15 minutes, we'll come back.